Hello and welcome to Are You Connected? Today is Sunday, October the 26th. This is the first episode for quite a while. I'm Lois Smethurst and I'm here with my friend Jenny Ashby. Hello Jenny, how are you going?
Hello Lois, I'm fine. It's a lovely, warm, sunny day.
Oh, it's spring. We've come through the horrible winter and we're into spring and the weather's beautiful.
Actually, it's almost like summer up here. The grass is all dried out and we got our hose working yesterday so we can water some things.
We're still in spring, I think. It's but the weather, when it warms up, it's hot, isn't it? We've got the hot and the cold happening.
It is very hot. And what have you been up to lately at school, Lois?
At school, well, we've sort of buzzed right past the film festival which we had, which was very successful. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I'm having a lot of fun teaching my grade 2 Scratch, and their eyes just light up. They love it. So on Friday, we learned how to animate a character to swim across the screen because we're doing Under the Sea as our inquiry unit, and we're going off to the aquarium. So they're going to make a little narrative about their characters that they've chosen to animate, and we're going to, you know, just have a really simple narrative that they're going to make and program. So that's my exciting thing I'm doing. I'm working with my Leaper still, and we're doing some fun things with making ads about global warming and endangered animals and a bit of this and a bit of that. What about you, Jen?
Oh, well, I've been getting into Minecraft, of course, with our Minecraft club that's still going along.
Yeah.
I've been doing a bit of QR coding. Kids have been getting into QR codes. We're finally actually getting to make QR codes. They've loved making them, and we're up to the stage where we're connecting our movies to QR codes.
Right.
This is all just learning the process at the moment, so our content isn't the key. Then we're going to move on to great book reviews on filmed and stuck on the back of books. It's been my aim to get that going.
And then you'll post the QR codes in
on the back group. Of the books in the library.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a good idea.
On the back of the books that the kids are reading, and the QR code will be there and they can scan it and see what someone says about
with
that
their iPad.
Or an iPod.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like fun.
So that's been keeping me very busy, along with the Funtronics Club I've been running.
And that's you might have to explain a little bit about that.
Funtronics, it's all about lights and batteries and circuits. And we've been doing e-crafts, which is where we use metal thread to sew through material and sew on our LED lights.
Yeah.
And batteries with a battery holder, and you have all your positives and your negatives going the right way. Yeah. Hopefully the lights come on when you put the battery in.
Are you making some Halloween ones, are you?
Well, yeah, that's a good idea. We've been making wristbands.
Yeah.
So wristbands that have lights going around and light up and whatever. And finding that threading needles is very challenging.
Yeah. So I can imagine it'll be the hardest part.
It is. I'm glad they have those needle threaders.
Yeah.
So it's and actually just the skills of children these days with sewing. They've never seen anyone sew because no one sews.
No, that's true.
So no one at home sits and sews. They've just never seen it.
Well, there you go. You're bringing back some old world skills as well.
Yeah, old world skills. And, you know, I'm going to go on to doing our WeDos, like you've been using your WeDos. We're going to connect up the WeDos and we'll connect up the Makey Makeys and the Arduino boards and those sort of things.
Yeah, the WeDo I haven't used those before, but I'm doing those with the grade twos as well. So that's, I like the structure in that where it's got the online ideas so you can say, well, this is the thinking, you might test behind it and that. So that's quite good too. And the kids are loving that, working in pairs, building.
Yeah.
I love watching the different relationships they have when they're working with something like Lego and which kids come to the front as, you know, capable and able to.
Experts.
Yeah, experts.
Lego experts.
Yeah. Anyway, Jen, I think you've been doing some pretty special stuff with Minecraft. Last weekend, was it, when you had a whole weekend of Minecraft?
We did. We had a whole weekend of Minecraft last week with Tim Wicks, and it was terrific. And this week I've had some great spin-offs from it back in the classroom.
Oh, that's great, isn't it?
So teachers telling me things that the kids who came to Minecraft have been doing this week that they've never done before. Two days in a row has written a whole page with no one helping him of writing.
That's amazing.
Usually he's written like three words.
Yeah, so he's just excited about something.
Yeah, it's just got confidence going in him, and he just wants to. Because on the day, there was a fair bit of literacy involved with using Minecraft. Because they're using the chat window and they're putting in codes, and if you don't spell things right for commands, it doesn't work. And another one who came and is a very, very able Minecrafter, his teachers told me that she actually caught him reading a novel in reading time. Usually he does anything but reading. And there he was, he had a book and he was actually reading it. And she was like, "What's happened?" And he's just, because he was such an expert at Minecraft, that has actually flowed on into what he's doing in the classroom. So isn't that great?
That is great. Now, talking of Tim Wicks.
Yes.
We were able to interview Tim, weren't we?
We were able to interview Tim. He kindly agreed to. So yes. We might have a listen to that coming up right now. Tonight, Lois and I are interviewing Tim Wicks, and Tim is from the Northern Territory. Is that right, Tim?
Yep, Darwin.
And I'm calling Tim a Minecraft extraordinaire. What do you think, Tim?
yeah, nice, thanks.
Guru is another good word.
Guru, it could be a guru, yes, yes.
Yeah, right.
At the moment, Tim is touring Australia with his Minecraft camps. So he's on a huge road trip. And I had the pleasure the other week of being a roadie, Lois.
Oh, did you?
I get to be a roadie, yep.
Carrying bags.
Packing up cables and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
We have photos to prove it.
Oh, look, techies need a roadie, don't they?
Yes. So Tim was at my school last weekend for 2 days and we had kids come both days. So it was great fun.
Minecraft camp, Jen, sounds wonderful. How many kids did you have?
We had 24 one day and 12 the next day.
That's pretty good for a weekend.
Yeah, it was great. Tim, about the Minecraft camps, how long have you been doing them?
Since the start of 2013. So I've came up with the idea in the first couple of months of 2013. I began my education consultancy ThinkFiz towards the end of 2012, and it was sort of around about then. So, yeah. 18 months.
And for those who don't know what Minecraft camps are, Tim, tell us what the format is.
Minecraft camps are one-day events, generally, from 9 till 3, for 6 to 13-year-olds. That's negotiable, but that's what I put out there. I take my own laptops. I've got 24 MacBook Airs. I have my own network, mainly because most of the time I'm either in a government institution of some sort, like a library or a school, and they usually have their ports blocked. Well, they always have their ports blocked, so I carry around my own network that allows me to operate an online server. So the school usually, or the library usually provides a room that can seat about 30 people and, you know, access to toilets. And one of the reasons I love working with schools, is, aside from the fact that I'm an educator myself, is that they always have somewhere we can go out and play. Which is important. You saw how many breaks we had, Jen, and the importance of getting out there and resting our eyes and running around, and how much the kids actually loved that aspect of the camp.
Yes. You can get them away from their computers to go outside.
Yeah, they like it because they're in an environment where everyone loves the same stuff. As soon as they get out of the room, they all start talking flat out. They start talking Minecraft and about what they've done and what they're planning to do, and it doesn't matter who's listening. So they build rapport with each other pretty quickly. So, look, I built a server online. I started by using Minecraft Edu, but there's Minecraft Edu's not really a for-profit sort of piece of software, so I had to develop my own server, which I've called Buddyverse, and it's a massive server that the kids come and play on online. And part of the beauty of that is that whilst they're playing and building relationships in the camps, that same server is online when they leave, so they can catch up with each other in the same place and continue building and collaborating later on. They're fairly structured days. I can go into that in a bit more detail if you like. And there's a really strong leadership component that's starting to develop in the camps as well, where, and I think, Jen, you've had already some pretty immediate success from what you were saying earlier about getting kids to take on roles that have a component of leadership, not so much in-game, or both in-game and out-of-game. And I guess the other thing about these camps is that there's a real attraction for kids that are on the autism spectrum. So I get up between 30 to 50% of them, my participants are on the spectrum.
Do these kids know each other before they come sometimes? I mean, just online, for example.
Oh, very occasionally. Most of the time there'll be a few that know each other, either through RL, real life, or RL, yeah, or online. But more often than not, most of the kids, they might know one or two might know each other, and there might be three or four groups that, you know each other, but generally they don't.
And the funny thing is with a lot of these kids, they can be in the same school as the other kids but not know them.
Yeah. That's astounding, actually.
You know, they haven't played with them before.
We had three kids from your school, Jen, who, funnily enough, all sat at the same table.
Yeah.
So they obviously, you know, that familiarity of knowing each other's faces must have helped them become comfortable initially. Mm. But when we actually went and sat down with them and said, you know, do you guys play with each other? No, we're in different classes and different ages.
Yeah, and we had a child in prep right up to a child in grade five. Come to the camp. So we had a wide range in ages, plus we had kids from lots of other schools, which was really nice.
We had someone in year seven as well.
Year seven.
I find it hard to imagine you had a preppy.
Yeah.
With the preppies, Lois, that's why I say 6 to 13.
Yeah.
If they bring in a preppy, someone that's five, because I've written 6 to 13, parents will usually ring me first and say, oh, look, my kid's five, but they know Minecraft and they love it.
Yeah.
And that allows me to then talk to them about their child so I can just get a feel for how independent they're going to be.
Yeah.
I'm pretty straightforward with the parents about that. And so usually when we get five-year-olds, they're cool as.
And then, but you did say earlier that you had a parent stay with one of their children, so.
Oh, sometimes I'll have five or six parents stay.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, that must make it easier for them.
Yeah,
or it can be.
It does. It can be. I find that
they're probably Minecrafters themselves. They're probably closet Minecrafters.
Oh yeah, a few of them. But I'll often pull the parents away from the kids and get a conversation started around what Minecraft. Because most parents that come in, almost all of them, have absolutely no idea. All they know about is the obsession.
Yep.
Which is, I'm using their word.
Yep. Now, I have a question about that.
Yep, sure. I want to get them talking about some of the more positive stuff around it. And and at the same time, I'm sort of, and for those parents listening, I do this on purpose. I just want to get them away from the kids a bit and let them collaborate and connect with each other without the parent being there.
So what are some of the positive things you say about Minecraft? Because I'm still not convinced. I'm not very familiar with it. And I know when children talk to me about Minecraft, they're quite obsessive about it and they've had a lot of time with it at home already. Mm-hmm. So I think how can you justify spending a lot of time with it at school as well?
Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that. When you were saying that, Lois, one of the things that came to mind straight away was how as a kid I was obsessed by cricket. I would copy the Don Bradman thing. Like from the moment I got up, I'd get a cricket stump and a golf ball and whack it against the wall. Every minute of my day was in my, all I did was think about and talk about cricket. Every recess and lunch, that's all I did. And after school, that's all I'd go and play and then go to practice and then come home. And I'd also, back in those days before there was the internet, cutting newspaper articles out and putting them into my scrapbook, all about cricket. I know I drove some teachers nuts with my obsession. And I think that's just a thing that...
A passion winner, I'd say.
It is. And, no one was concerned about it. And I think in our culture, that's to do with it being outside and sporty. Yeah. And that makes it okay. And so no one's going to question it at all. But to get back to... So that just... You sort of brought that thought up in my mind. I think it's a really pertinent one. But I'll get back to your question, which was around what do I see as the benefits for Minecraft?
Mm-hmm.
I first saw it when my son was playing it as a seven-year-old. And I didn't take any notice. It was just another game. Then at that stage I was working for the Department of Education in the Northern Territory as a trainer of teachers in innovative technologies, and they asked me to to learn up and do some training on Minecraft in education. So I not having no idea what that was about, started to look into it, and we found a guy that was really kicking goals with it, Stephen Elford from Shepparton, had been kicking some goals with it early on. So we actually got him and asked him to come up to Northern Territory and got him to spend a couple of days with me and a day with me and a day with some teachers, where I got trained up as to how Minecraft can work in education. So I guess I had a bit of an indoctrination through my work initially, my Department of Education finished as I began my education consultancy, and Minecraft wasn't on my radar as I began at the beginning of 2013. I had done it in my job, but I hadn't really had any intention to utilise it in my business. So first of all, my son's playing it. I am starting to get excited about some of the stuff I see him play. But I was listening to – there's a guy called Wes Fryer in the US whom I cannot get enough of. I love the way he gets his message out and the sort of way he approaches education. I was listening to one of his podcasts. And he was talking about Scratch. You know about Scratch?
The love Scratch.
Love Scratch. And I knew a little bit about it, but what he was doing was, and Wes works for a department in the States, not sure which one. So he wasn't running his own business, but he was doing a similar sort of thing. So he was running a Scratch camp. And he was recording it. He was recording his audio, his podcast, whilst in the middle of the camp. So there was, and Jenny, you'll understand the bedlam, the noise. Mm. Imagine trying to run a podcast through that.
Yeah.
So the idea got me excited. And I was also at a time in my business where I really needed to up the ante and I guess improve my sort of work rate and therefore income. And it hit me as I was listening to that podcast that that idea could, I guess, initially be monetized, but also that Minecraft could be rolled out in that way as camps. Yeah. So, I'm scooting around your question.
Yep, but, getting closer, I think.
So, what I see in it is there's an element of communication in Minecraft so when you're playing, there's a chat option within the game, so you can type your chat to each other and we can talk typing while we play. There's that obsession, and we can use the word passion as well, mm-hmm. that kids have within Minecraft really drives them to learn how to spell things. So my son, whose literacy was quite low at the age of 7, within 18 months, his literacy was caught up and starting to go really, really well.
Does he have a use for it?
Yeah, he really did have a use for it, and that's what he needed. Yeah.
Well, we saw that on Saturday, Tim, where one of the kids said, I don't like to read or write. I can't do that.
I can't spell, yeah.
And by the end of the day, he could spell a whole host of words because he'd had to use them in commands. Could you do a bit of programming in it, Lois?
Okay.
You've got to type in commands and stuff.
Yeah,
and if you don't type in the right thing,
they don't work.
It doesn't work. So it was
great. That's exactly right.
He had to learn fly.
FLY. And he came over to both Jen and I on different occasions and tried to drag us over to do the typing for him, which is obviously a strategy that works for him somewhere. And we just, first of all, we've got that leadership thing happening in the camp, so we could say, have you asked a coach? And get to see if we could get him to go and ask another kid. But also we would he was also sort of refusing to read off the board. So I'd write the word fly, for example, up on the whiteboard and then say, there it is. If you want it, it's there. And leave it at that. And he really picked up on it.
Yeah.
So he started getting a different coloured pen, and he would come and underline where the word was so he could see it, and then he went back and he could use it. So it was really great.
Yeah, so that authentic purpose for literacy. So
And a spin-off from it, Lois, that supports that. One of my kids who went and would write probably 3 words in literacy time in grade 2, this week, for the first time ever, without help, has written a page of writing in writing time.
About his Minecraft camp?
Just about doing writing.
But that's not the reason you use Minecraft. That's not your prime reason, because you could probably do that in other ways too.
But so with what these kids,
Minecraft have that but, nothing else has.
But with these kids, yeah. Minecraft is the turn on for those kids.
Yeah.
And it's getting these kids, you know, turned on. And there are lots of them, heaps yeah. of them. And they turn up at these camps. And it's a really great positive thing for them. Once they've got a positive thing with this and in a social situation, not in their bedroom by themselves, they can then use that positiveness in other areas at school, which I've seen this week. I've seen some of these kids that came do very positive stuff this week. Another one today, I've put him on as a coach for our Minecraft club next week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone in. I've given him access to the Minecraft and he's gone in and he's built a whole land with different plots and things that we're going to use in our camp next week. Very responsively, he's asked me all about it. What do you think about this? Maybe I could add that. And mm-hmm. today in reading time in his classroom, he had a novel and was sitting reading a novel. And the teacher came to me and said, what's happened to him? What's happened to Locke? I'm like, wow, I don't know. But, you know, this is after the camp and it's more than one of these kids.
So, Lois, the game by itself has some benefits that you're probably... You'd be hard up to find in other games,
yeah.
but it's when we start to use it as facilitators of education that it can have really exciting outcomes. And so, you know, left to his own devices, Locke wouldn't have had those experiences that would have led to him being so pumped. But Jen's right. Initially, they're just so passionate about it and they're so into it that it drives their learning in pretty much anything you put in front of them.
So, Tim, how can teachers begin in Minecraft? Because it's pretty mind-boggling. You just think, oh, no, I don't know about it. It's too hard.
Yeah, yeah. When I talk to groups of teachers, I put it to them that if we had this tool that engaged 90 to 100% of the kids in their class and you could pretty much get them to work towards any educational outcome through it, you'd want to have a crack at it. You want to check it out at least. Mm. And most people would agree with that. But if that's the case, then why isn't there a larger uptake? I think there will in the future be a larger uptake. But right now, there's just really small pockets around the world where Minecraft is taking off. Exactly. 100 million licenses plus sold worldwide. Yeah, it's taken off already, but in schools by educators. So, and I think there's a couple of reasons that it's there at that stage. One of them is that when you get started, it can be fairly overwhelming. In that you need licenses, you need to download some software, it needs to go on a computer, and you need to configure things so that the server will work. Mm. You need to purchase licenses, etc.
How many kids have managed that?
Kids can, yeah, but when you sit down and look at the scope of setting up the Minecraft Edu, which is what I recommend schools use, mm-hmm. it can be a bit daunting, and so that's where I see it stop pretty much every time that it has stopped. Mm. They don't even get started. We've actually through ThinkFizz got a package where that is such a problem that I've developed a package where we actually people can pay us. We just go and do the whole lot, and then just send all the information to them and help them set it up. So hopefully that'll help some teachers overcome it. The other thing is that once you do get it set up, there's a fear factor. Like the kids know more than most of us, and that excites me. But I've seen in most situations, it's not exciting for a lot of teachers, and they're not sure what to do with it. And sometimes for good reason. If you have someone that's a little malicious in your class, they can completely turn your lesson upside down if they've got control of your server and you don't. Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, for good reason. So,
do you run Minecraft camps for teachers?
Yeah. That's my favourite thing to do. Okay. Although I will run them without kids, my preference is to run them with kids in the room. Kids are the best coaches, and kids are really good, not just with the content of, you know, this is how you do, you know, build a axe and this is how you build a house, but Kids are just generally great coaches, and there's a lot that we can learn from them. So to put them in that situation where they're leading, I find really important. And the other thing about running teacher PD is by having kids in the room, it earths the teachers. We get a lot more done if I've got kids in the PD. But I ran a day in Adelaide a couple of weeks ago and a day in Sydney with just teachers, and they were really good. So, yeah, run PD just to help them get up and running. And I've got a stack of resources, most of which I give away, which are just to help people get up and running with Minecraft Edu. Do you have show notes at all?
We do have show notes, yes, on the blog. Yeah. On our blog, we put different show notes.
I'll forward all the links to you guys. And if you could put them up there, then we'll anyone that's there. Listening that wants to download any of the stuff that I've developed, feel free.
Thank you. Yeah.
Jen, we talked after the camp about where you'd get started, and that's what I share with you is what I'd share with anyone, definitely initially and perhaps even as time goes by, that you keep it simple. You keep it really, really simple. You acknowledge that the kids know a fair bit and ask them to be a part of it. A trap I reckon, and I know that as I say this, there are Minecraft educators and some really good ones that'll disagree with me, but I'm not into using other people's maps. I know there's some fantastic maps. The World of Humanities is incredible. Mathlandia, built by our own Stephen Elford, brilliant. But I, as a teacher, I wouldn't grab someone else's lesson plan and work from it, and I feel the same way about maps. In fact, I don't use maps. I usually get the kids to develop what we're going to do themselves. So if we're going to work on community, for example, I used to build the road and then we'd work on the community together. I don't even build the road anymore because the kids can do that and they love it. Mm. And there's math in that.
Do you know my coach today who set up our land for next week, set up the plots? I said, oh, have you got them made big enough or whatever? And he said, oh, well, Tim's plots were 16 by 16.
He already knew. I didn't know that.
He knew. When he'd been in there, he'd counted up and knew it was 16 by 16, the plot. How big is his plot? So I said, oh, well, that must be big enough then. And he said, I'm going to make bigger plots out the back. So, you know, there's maths.
Yeah.
There's a lot of maths in it, isn't
there? Oh, yeah, some tons.
It dovetails with every component of the curriculum if you want it to. Yeah. I'm not like... As a classroom teacher, I wouldn't be using Minecraft full time. That wouldn't make any sense to me. But and it would kill me. I wouldn't be into it. So, but it's for me as an educator, I'd have it sitting there so that it can be utilised when needed. Mm. And the other thing is that I'll only work with big groups if I really have to. I like working in small groups, just generally with classes.
Yeah.
I find collaboration's deeper and the kids can connect without too many issues.
Well, so the optimum size of a group is like four, isn't it?
Four to six, I reckon.
Yeah, four to six. Anything other than that's too much cross-communication. You can't actually keep control of it.
Yeah.
So I suppose that works for a Minecraft group as well.
Yeah, I feel it does. But, you know, again, if anyone's listening and they've got alternative views, that's what it's all about. You know, we can only grow from sharing that sort of information. So can people comment in the blog? Is that how it works?
They can comment in the blog, can't they, Lois?
Yeah, great. Yep. All right.
Tim, I was also I really liked the concept of we have an epic challenge of some sort, a building challenge or any sort of challenge, and our challenge next week is going to be a building challenge in our new flat land. Yeah. And I really liked the way on Sunday how we started out the epic challenge with the kids actually making up the criteria.
Yeah.
So that to complete the challenge, you actually have to have these seven. We had ended up with seven different criteria that if they got all those things, then they got the top sort of reward. And if they got these ones, they got that reward. And then if they only had these, they got the lower reward out of the three different rewards. And I really liked the way they came up with all those, you know, different criteria.
Yeah.
And that told us more about the games and the what's available in the game. Like one of the criteria, Lois, was you had to show it to so many other people before Tim.
Okay.
You had to have so many other people check it. Another one was you had to take a screencast. So they were screencasting and walking through their
narrating
thing and narrating using QuickTime and producing these little movies about their thing they'd made. in Minecraft. And imagine that. You can put that in a book creator or somewhere and on your blog.
When you talk about rewards, wouldn't the intrinsic reward of just doing it be more than what those kids, you know, another reward on top of that is not really going to account for much. They probably just love doing it.
No.
No, they wanted the prizes.
It's Minecraft. It's in Minecraft you get your prize.
Oh, that's what I'm wondering, yeah. When you're talking about rewards, I didn't know whether you were talking about an extrinsic or intrinsic.
No, it's in Minecraft.
I reckon if it was a Minecraft T-shirt, Lois, I don't reckon it would have had anywhere near the impetus. So there's two types of Minecraft that I use. One is was using Minecraft Edu.
Yeah.
And Minecraft Edu is really made for schools, and specifically it works very well with schools who can't use online servers. So you can use an offline LAN that you can continue to play collaboratively, but it's not going outside of the school. So that's Minecraft Edu. Yeah. In the camps, we use Buddyverse, which is an online server, and that's a server I've spent a lot of time setting up. And it's so the leadership roles or ranks and components are actually in the game. Wow. And all the rewards are actually in the game. Wow. So, yeah. And there's like an in-game currency. There's a whole currency where they start with $5,000, and if they want to buy a house, they've got to save up to
$400,000. Oh, wow. So. That sounds real. I think you better go up. It's 600 these days.
and kids can be coaches, and then they can move on to the next level and be moderators.
Mm. So, Jen, you've got the Edu server in your school?
Yes, we've got the Edu server in our school. Mm. And Tim, I do have a question about the Edu server because I run the club, which is on a Tuesday after school, and I'm sort of hoping when it gets going towards the end of the year that I can get some kids from other schools to come as well, which would be great.
Yes. But
we're running this Edu club and we've got this flat world in there now that we're going to be doing stuff in. Mm-hmm. But because it's been so exciting and we've seen the spin-off on kids, one of my teachers wants to use it in their classroom.
Yay.
So I'm thinking, now, are they going to use our same flat world? They might do other things What will happen?
If they use your same flat world, you'll come back and it'll be different.
So
and,
how do we get a world for them?
It's a great question. It's a wonderful question. And it's one of the most common ones as well. So there's two different ways of doing it. Mm. One that I know of. One is that
I'm thinking we need another server.
Oh, and we should mention as well that your server is central. It's not sitting on someone's laptop in a classroom, which happens often. Yours is actually sitting on a central computer or server within the school and people can access it from anywhere.
Yeah.
So one of the options is to get a second server, put it up there, and then you can have two different worlds functioning exactly the same time. Yeah. It's $41 for the extra server. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think that'll be the best way to go because class can do their own thing in there.
Yeah. The other option is to, and a lot of schools do this, and you've got to be very, very careful because it can create problems, is to, at the end of your lesson, you save the world.
Yeah.
And then at the beginning of the next teacher's lesson, they have to load their world in. And if someone forgets one of those steps, your world will be different. Yeah, having the extra server, considering it costs next to nothing, it's definitely worth doing. Especially that's really exciting that you've got a teacher that's piqued their interest.
Mm. I have put in place something else though that I don't say I'm proud of it. It doesn't really make me proud, and I'd like to not do it, but I've been burnt, and when you get burnt, you do things that you wouldn't want to do. I have made on our laptops, I've made a separate user for Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids don't actually have access in their face of Minecraft unless they go onto that separate user.
Mm-hmm.
And the separate user is actually timed out during school time. It comes online at 4 p.m.
Okay.
So when we come to club after school, we have our talk and chat and decide what we're going to do and everything, and they know it won't come on till 4. So it makes that really great, and there's no one having to be pulled off the computers or anything, and no one tries to use it during school time. Because actually I did have a time where I didn't have it like that, you see. And kids found it, of course.
Minecrafting in the middle of something else.
That's right. They were doing it the wrong time, so I had to do that. But it's working really well, and I think I'll build up trust and you know, slowly that could be something. Well, today I could let this kid in as a coach in school time, and he felt very privileged because of it. And I think giving out some privilege like that to more than
that's
one.
That's super exciting. That's I really think that's where it's at. If you can get to a stage where you start to lead kids in to run.
Yeah.
Run the. Lois, when we're, just something related to that, Jen. Lois, when we were doing that, we called it the Epic Project, and I'm using that wording because I was doing epic competitions, epic build competitions.
Yeah.
And you know, through its wording, it was a competition. Who's going to win? Who's first, second, and third?
Mm.
And what I wanted to work towards was more of a project-based thing where, because in the competition, someone had to judge who's the winner. With the project approach, and this is what I loved, on the weekend, Jen, it's the first time I've been able to pull it off and have it work, was where you and I as the adults in the room really had very little input in anything other than to encourage and sort of motivate. We just were encouraging and chatting and experiencing what the kids were doing. They already had their criteria. They were running to the board with each other, pointing at the criteria and saying, yes, we've done that, no, we haven't done that, right, let's do this one next. Then through the initial instructions, they then came to us and said, we've completed all seven. And the last criteria is that two other people have made sure they have. Mm. So if they come to me and say that that's the case, then there's no judging and no contest. Yeah. It's you've done it based on the criteria. Here's the reward. I didn't even have to look at them.
Self-evaluated, self-reflection. Yeah.
And peer. I love
peer,
it.
That was great.
Talking about peers, what about parents? How do you get parents on board?
Yeah, it's initially... initially, they're bewildered. Mm. Some are concerned.
Yep.
Very, very few are as excited as I am.
just to talk to you about their child's obsession.
Yeah. Absolutely. I had a camp in Cairns a couple of months ago, and at the end of the camps, I usually get a lineup of kids wanting to come up and talk to me about stuff they've done and ask me questions. And at the Cairns camp, I had more parents lined up than I had kids.
Right.
It was actually that camp where something clicked for me, and so I've been doing a lot of writing around helping parents get their head around this.
Yes.
Mm.
So I've written three articles recently. One was 10 tips for Minecraft parents. One was around ASD in Minecraft. And I just put one out today that's four tips for literacy in Minecraft.
So you put to those as well now.
Sure. Okay. And they're getting pushed around the social media heaps. But the point is that it was that camp when I had four or five kids on one side and 10 parents literally on another. and I'm like, sorry, kids, I'm dealing with the parents. That's when I started to understand that they're actually the people who need more information and to know about it. And they're also, let's face it, they're the gatekeepers. They're the people who will decide that my kid is or isn't going to get to use it. And also I want to talk to parents about it because the language they use around that game is it's so far off the mark. It's out of not knowing, and if I can get in front of them, I'll tell you. I even had a parent. This is in Darwin. I had a parent who came in and started quite aggressively, saying something like, "Well, I've dropped them off, and I don't know why. I hate this freaking game, and it's just absolute rubbish." And really getting quite aggressive about it. Yeah. And
he dropped them off.
She dropped them off, and I actually pulled her aside and I actually used that football analogy with her at that time, and about what I said to her was that if your kids were this excited about soccer or football or netball or whatever it is, you'd take them to the football, you'd buy them their sports equipment, you'd stay there and cheer probably and take an interest in what they're doing, and yet when they're passionate about this particular thing, you're using that kind of language around your kids. I said, I just don't get it. Mm. And she sort of shrugged her shoulders and looked, and off she went. And when she came back, she was there was no real change. No real change. But I met her in a camp later on down the track, actually in a completely different Sunshine Coast. And she was one of my greatest advocates. She just said, this game has so much potential. And she actually ended up bringing four or five other people along with her to the camp. So, So how do I get parents on board? Basically, they just need to know some of the cool stuff that can be done. And also, remember, if the game's left to its, if the kids are left to their own devices on this game, it's another game. For the most part. So if you can show parents that, hey, if kids take a screenshot, they can annotate that screenshot and it starts to have some sort of value beyond the game. They can write stories in the game or on a this is what I've got in my, my latest article. They can write journals. They can write them by hand on a notepad. They can write them in-game. They can write lists. They can do screencasts, oral literacy. There's all sorts of things they can do, and the parents don't know, have to know how to do it. All they've got to do is, or like for with my son, if he doesn't do some form of writing attributed to the game, he's not getting on the next day.
I do the same with the iPads. With my grandchildren, if they don't make me a movie or something creative, they don't get to play the rest of the games.
And I think, you know, if kids had Lego, for instance, when kids are playing with Lego, what parent wouldn't want their kids to play with Lego? But what parent is going to let their kids stay up till midnight playing Lego?
No, we don't.
See, we control it. We say, right, it's time to pack it all away. You've got to smash up your things and put it all away and it gets done.
Yeah. Minecraft should be treated in exactly the same way.
Yeah, that's right.
Not endless.
And the other thing is, when the kids are told to make that movie on the iPad, Lois, or my son's doing the writing, they don't do it begrudgingly.
No, they love it. They say, can we make a movie on the iPad? And of course you can. And they go, okay, and they make the movie and then they go off and play their games. But, you know, they think I'm not awake to that.
There was another really good spin-off I liked from it too, and that is the face-to-face that kids get at the camps really brings the social element to the game. And they learn some of the kids' usernames. And now they're going home and going back into it and they will recognise the names and bring a face to mind from the camp.
And so it's not completely online. It has a face-to-face.
Adding that face-to-face element, which is really great.
That physicality has its biggest impact is kids are still developing what their idea of an online persona is. And what I've found in the camps is that most kids have pretty much the same persona when I meet them physically as they do when they're online on the server. But there is a group of kids who are still experimenting with that. And so when they're at the camp, they're one way. And when I see them online, they're completely different. And so the camps, initially for me, that was just a shock of experience. It's like, wow, they were like this before. And what are they doing now? And so what that's helped me develop in the physicalness of the camps is to address that, address that with the kids and let them know that, you know, the way you are now, that's the way you're expected to be when you're online as well, you know.
That's an etique type thing, isn't it? That's like this is how you behave. If you behave like this in real life, you should also be behaving like this online.
It's digital citizenship.
Yeah, it's digital citizenship.
And on Buddy Server, though, there are moderators who watch out for what's being said and everything, so it's really great.
Well, most of the moderators are kids.
But they know what they want to have in there.
They really do. There's myself, three other teachers and a guy from the States whose son is on the server as well. So we as adults sort of we're a constant within the server, but through that coach and then moderator and then eventually admin sort of leadership program, I've got how many have we got? Three or four. I've now got four kids that have worked their way through that program and are admins on the server. Now, when you're an admin on the server, you've got access to everything. I don't control anything that you do. So by the time you get there, and so we've got a 11-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 13-year-old, I think, who are all admins on my server, and I trust to the point where. And, you know, I've put 1,200 hours plus into that server. I'm not going to hand over something that, you know, that they could wreck in hours unless I really trusted them.
I hope you've got a backup.
Yes, of course, in this day and age.
So, I mean, this idea you're talking about where kids have the face-to-face and the online, I guess that's where having a Minecraft-type activity in schools addresses that as well, doesn't it?
Yes.
I reckon it's a really important thing that we all have to get to one way or another. Yeah.
Tim, just going back to classrooms, what have you seen teachers doing with it that are using it in the classroom?
Yeah, there's a multitude of different things. You know my approach, and that is start simple and even just start with a flat weld and mark it out a bit. An example of that that I worked with a teacher on, it was with a year six class who'd been reading a book, and I think it was 45 and 47 Stella Street, and we just created a flat weld, split them into groups of five and six, put a different coloured block within viewing distance of each other but out of each other's way, gave them the instructions, and off they went to replicate the street. So the idea was, we've read most of the book, we want to now know your understanding in detail of how that street looks. So as a group, they had to do that.
Mm.
And the beauty of that was there were kids in each group that were experienced and had never played before. So it was interesting to watch that dynamic.
Mm.
And also, once they'd built it, they had to take a screenshot. They had to they had to record it somehow so they had evidence of their learning. There was no instructions on how to do it. One kid pulled out an iPod and actually videoed part of what they were doing on the screen.
Oh, yes.
Which is, you know, it's...
Great thinking, great problem solving.
I think so, yeah. The next, interestingly, that teacher at the time, Rach Bundell, said we were 1 hour into a two-hour session, we'd already finished our lesson. And gone well beyond our expectations, really. And Rachel said, "Look, I've got this. You can sit down over there. I'm going to take the next hour."
Mm.
And she then told the kids to find another area, work in the same groups, and extend themselves so that the street that they've just built, what does it look like in 20 years' time? Mm-hmm. So, you know, is it are there houses that are run down? Are there new houses, new families?
Innovating on the text.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. So that's one way. She started with very little and just let the kids drive it.
Yep.
And then thinking of this is completely really different. In the same school, though, Genevieve Frick was in her classroom using iPads, and just because the iPads, you don't have the control factor of on iPads that you do with Minecraft Edu on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to watch her run her lesson, and she just did a fairly simple maths lesson where the kids had to do some perimeter, some area, and a bit of addition and multiplication, and then. And then show their understanding of their learning. And again, she didn't really give much instruction around how that needed to look. Mm. And it was interesting to watch one kid decide he was going to do a screenshot, and then that sort of flowed through the room. Oh, I'm going to take a screenshot too. And then, you know, in the multiplication section, one kid had to do, seven groups of three horses. What does that look like, and what does that eventuate? What does that become? And they then put 21 horses in a paddock. Another kid who did the same sum, instead of doing that, made the number 21 out of blocks and then rose up above it, flew up above it and looked down, and then took a screenshot of the number 21. So there was a lot of creativity, and I loved the way someone thought of something cool and it just sort of like a wildfire went through the classroom.
Mm, yeah.
So there was that.
That's teaching kids, isn't it? That's really powerful. That's the best thing when you.
Yeah, I reckon.
Mm.
Yeah, I love being a part of that as a learner myself, so I can see that working. And Stephen Elford, the guy that got me started on the road to using Minecraft in education, he's prolific with his videos on YouTube. So he's created a lot of videos explaining Minecraft Edu. How to do things as a teacher in Minecraft Edu, but also he's recorded some of his lessons. And I actually, before I even met him, it was one of his lessons on, I can't remember now. One of his lessons where he recorded, he was recording the screen itself, the game, but you could hear all of the kids in the background talking to each other, the excitement level and what they were, they were achieving. Steve made a lesson. So Stephen makes maps. I don't know if it's all the time, but he does do this. It appears quite a bit. He'll build a map and then the kids go in the map and experience it and learn from it. So one of the things he did was built a human cell. And inside of the cell had platforms at each important part of the cell with little sort of notes or signs that explained what each part of the cell was. So the kids had to go through the cell and, help us out, Steve, in the comments if you're listening, but as to what they actually did. But I think they took notes and they learned, had... come out of that cell with more knowledge about the internal aspect of a cell. So there's three different ways, I guess.
Well, it's interesting today because you know how you said place the colour blocks around?
Yeah.
Well, I said that to my coach today. I said, yeah, just put colour blocks around and people can go and find, we'll tell them, go get the, you're on the red block, go there and you can build your thing there. Well, he didn't. He built the road. He built the road through. Then he made his plots off with edges all around them, plots.
Like our, the Buddyverse server.
And he put signs at the front of each plot with a number on. And he said, we'll just give kids a number and they know what number plot theirs is.
Yeah, why did we even bother thinking about it? He came up with a bit of solution.
So he was all organised. All we wanted was copy and paste, though.
Yes, yeah. Actually, I think Elfie has made a video on YouTube about how that works. Yeah. So, because I just don't do very much building in Minecraft. I haven't needed to learn it. That copy and paste is just it's a permissions thing. So once you have the permission to do it, I think in Minecraft Edu, certainly in the Buddyverse, it's like that. But in Minecraft Edu,
because he made 20 plots, and once he'd made two, he would have liked to just got that and then put another one next to it, another one until he had 20. So
that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And why shouldn't he? I mean, if he can do it, if it's physically possible, he should be able to do it.
Yeah, but he sat there and very patiently did them all by hand, one by one. So that was great. Yeah. Well, Tim, I think we've had a great discussion about Minecraft and I'm thinking about it differently. Yeah, you're thinking about it differently?
I am thinking about it differently. I didn't realise that it had quite that potential, to be honest.
Yeah, it is massive. Like they say, kids, it is massive, Minecraft, and it's for us to use it in a really great way. So the educational benefits go over into other areas for the kids.
Mm.
Yeah, and that happens, which is great. You know, I've seen great results in a very, very short time this week. Mm. I'm amazed. So thanks, Tim. Thanks for coming tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Where are you at you next?
I've got two camps here in Mildura this weekend and then off to Melbourne to McKinnon. Very excited about working at McKinnon.
Yep.
And then the tour ends in December. I go Melbourne, Warrnambool, Mount Gambier, Adelaide, Alice, and then back home.
Right. Yep. A bit of driving there.
Yep.
Well, good luck, Tim, and safe travels, and thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that was a great interview, wasn't it, Lois?
I find it really interesting, Jen, because I haven't played Minecraft, and I sort of know what it's about, but I've always found it difficult to put it into my program and thinking that kids do enough of that at home. But listening to Tim's changed my mind, really, and I'm very tempted to actually get into that and give it a shot now.
You know, I think a Minecraft day for teachers would be great.
I think that's a good idea.
Wouldn't it? And come along and do Minecraft for the day. And, you know, I was there for that weekend, but I could still do another weekend. I'd like another weekend of it or another day to get my head around it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's what I need to do, get my head around it.
So, you know, I know I've learnt the commands and all that sort of thing, but I probably just need to sit down and bite the bullet and actually go in there and play.
Yeah.
So I don't need to do, just play.
Anyway, Jen, so what's coming up next?
Well, I'm off to Miami Device next.
Yeah, she says that casually.
So that's going to be so much fun.
That's going to be huge.
Yes, so it's going to be huge and meeting everyone that's doing anything with iPads.
Yeah.
So it'll be a really exciting time. It'll fly the time when I'm there, I guess, but I'll be reporting back. I'll be tweeting and doing all those things. Only problem is my tweets will be out of sync.
You'll be tweeting in our night time, Jen.
That's right. And you know how your night feed sometimes slips by?
Oh, yeah. It depends if you filter it, doesn't it?
You'll have to put me on your tweet deck.
Oh, but you're on my tweet deck. You're
in a little column.
Yeah, you're in a little column. So that's when I catch up with the night feed is I have certain people in a night column, like a tweet deck column.
Right.
And so I can see what's going on. It's not thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
It's sort of the educational people that I'm following.
You just stalk a couple of people.
Yeah, a few people. And then that way I don't feel like I miss everything that's going on at night.
Yeah, well, I just have a few people in my saved searches and click on those and it brings up the night feed, what's been happening. Yeah, so.
So that sounds wonderful, Jenny, and you're presenting there as well.
I'm presenting a couple of sessions. I'm doing coding as easy as 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing Get Real Maths
math without the S, because I say math.
That's right. And you're doing that on the iPad, yeah. I think that's the end of our show for today, Jen. We've gone on quite long enough. So thank you, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we hope to get back to you again soon. Have a great trip, Jen. And when you come back, we'll do another Are You Connected?
Yes. We'll see you then. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Thank you.